You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt and the only podcaster to bowl a perfect game and lead the NFL in receptions.
Oh, wow, that guy.
OJ McDuffie, you know that guy?
I kind of know that guy. Most of the time I know that guy. Yeah. Is that accurate?
It's accurate until someone proves it wrong. So as long as I keep saying it.
It's hella accurate then.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
That's right.
Speaking of accuracy and introductions, and this is kind of our first time to do this, but we have to introduce our guest. But I think before we do, should we do kind of a all rise for the honorable Ed Newman? Does someone have to tell him? No, you don't have to. I think, right? Then we, please be seated, right? So Judge Ed Newman. All-pro football player and author now, Ed Newman. Welcome to the Fish Tank.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, Big Seth. So I see Judge all the time, man. I can't do Ed because he's Judge Ed Newman, right?
Yeah.
So he's always involved, man. Everything we do as an alumni, of course, what he's done on the football field is legendary for this team, man. But it's an honor to have your honor in the podcast.
I like
right
what
now,
you did there.
For sure.
Thank
for
you.
Sure.
Thank you.
So Ed, you know, first and foremost, just congratulations on your new book.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Warrior Judge, a project 5 years in the making. Mm. Originally, my grandsons were going to be the audience, but it developed into a pretty good story. I think the fans will love it.
Absolutely, man. You know, it's like you said, Warrior Judge, one man's journey from gridiron to gavel. The more people learn about the story, the less surprised they should be that you've written a book. But what you finally made, you decide to make this into your memoir. Talk about what went into deciding to make your memoir.
About 6 years ago, I had the duty to read a eulogy for my father. It was pretty tough. One of the things I said to the audience, including my daughter, Holly, who's a co-author, was that I had no regrets. My relationship with my father never had any bad blood or any problem at all. He was always good for me and I was always good for him. And he'll just be dreadfully missed. After the funeral was over, my Holly came to me, Holly Newman Greenberg. She said, I feel the same way about you. Mm. I don't want to have any regrets. We need to memorialize your story. It's an important story. And we decided to get doing that, and that was 5-6 years ago.
Wow.
At lunch at the courthouse, we'd break the jurors or whatever, and I'd tell my Holly, we'd get together, and I'd dictate a story. We left 10 times as many stories on the table than it actually got into the book. But together, we were able to say, this has some serious themes. We can develop an architecture. This has some bones. This story has some good adventures. It's a love fest. I get to talk about my teammates, my coaches, the people that influenced me, the adversity I had to overcome. I'm not alone, but it's a taste.
Right.
You had your moments of adversity. Everybody does.
Right.
And it's about overcoming them and being really, really good. As far as Holly is concerned, she was like my therapist. You know, I had a lot of unresolved conflicts from football and coaches, and I got all that worked out.
Yeah.
That was a good part of it. My relationship with Holly became richer and much more substantive. And I have another daughter, Stephanie, and I love her to bits, and I don't want to think anything. She's the firstborn. So that was also a very good thing to be so close with my daughter, Holly. And then the love fest continues. There are key figures in this story, like Coach Shula, like Monty Clark, John Sandusky, Larry Little and Bob Kuchenberg, mm-hmm. Dwight Stevenson, great, great people, Kim Bocamper, and Dan Marino. We really relate with these people in a locker room. There's adventures. There's the inside stuff, the real competition. How do you prepare for a game? And then what is it all about? It's all about maybe having a stepping stone into the next career. And that's what I thought about, the plan B. And that's really a main part of it is there's oil and there's water, and you can compare football to oil and law to water. They don't mix very well. I found a solution, which I talk about in the book, about stirring it. They kind of emulsify a little bit, and you can see that you have a hybrid situation. The book is about compartmentalizing your assignments. We all know about that. Athletes know about that. So when you're out of football, you can, you know, jerk around a little bit, or you can go to law school if you like. And that's what I did.
And is there anything in between?
Right.
There's got to be something in between.
It was good use of my, it was a miraculous year. I got up at 6 in the morning. My wife is in the audience here. I want to talk to you about the bills, or you have to take care of that shrubbery. I don't have time for that. There are more important things. Off to the library. It used to be at Biscayne College, St. Thomas Villanova. They opened a library. I would open the doors. I would close the doors at University of Miami at night and open the doors that season.
First guy in, last guy out.
Right.
That's how it worked. Anything went wrong, there would have been an impossible a dream, but nothing went wrong. I was able to stay as in the first team All-Pro right guard, 1984. There's an interesting story. I think you might even ask about it. I came into the locker room. I had been accepted University of Miami Law, and I needed to speak to Coach Shula. I said, Coach, he's worried something bad's going to happen.
You'd love to make that conversation.
Something bad's going to happen. So I said, no, there's nothing bad. It's something good, but I don't want you to think I'm deceiving you. I want to be on board and straight with you. What? I says, I applied to law school. I got in, and I'm starting in September. I'm going to start classes in September at night. I looked at the time. There's no conflict on any of the times. And if there is a conflict, of course, I'll stay with the football. So I know where my bread is buttered.
Right.
He says to me, and there was a pact that we drew together, to his credit, what a great man he was. He said, anybody who wants to advance themselves in their lives, I'm not going to stand in your way. I praise you. I think it's great. But I have a first responsibility to this team, your teammates, my coaches, my owner, the owner, Robbie at the time. So you need to be top shelf. You're an all pro. The team depends on you. Yeah. And we're going to ask you to step down at a law school if you are letting us or disappointing us. Everybody in the meeting room, there's, you know, Roy Foster. He's sleeping on the table. And Dwight Stevens says, shut up. And I'm moving on. And that's what happened. Sandusky would watch me. And I said, Coach, you're giving me a hard time now. And 8 of the linemen are sleeping right now as we're speaking.
Yeah.
That's how it was.
Do you think that if you had that conversation year 2 or 3, as opposed to at that stage of your career, where you're now and all you're at a Pro Bowl level, you've proven yourself.
I couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
Shula wouldn't have done that.
Wouldn't have let
right. Yeah. I mean, you had built up equity.
He knew he could handle all that, right?
Yeah. He knew who this guy was.
I can count on this guy no matter what.
At the time, Shula actually had a daughter who graduated law school. Mm. So he knew about it.
Well, he knew what was what you were faced with, too.
What the burdens were.
Yeah.
And that's what I wonder. He was concerned that, sure, you can do that.
That's a legitimate concern. Yeah, I think it is.
Well, Ed, unlike today's game, when you were playing and a lot of guys at that time, they were all required to do something else other than football, correct? So you had to prepare for a job outside of football, right?
Yes. It's a modified. It's hard to have a full-time job when you only have 6 months to give. So a lot of guys had part-time jobs. Yes. You need to have that to make ends meet. There was also in the 60s, my rookie contract, 1973, was $18,000, six round draft pick.
That was like my internship, my first year here. I think I made about the same amount.
Right.
It was hard to make a living. So you're right. But in the 60s and the 50s, you couldn't make a living in the NFL. You had to have a job elsewhere. Yeah. Zonka was the first kick in Warfield with the new league that opened up. World Football, I think it was.
Yep.
Right.
And Bennett hired them for the Northmen. He shook the league. The league was terrible with contract. There was no free agency.
Right.
There was
right.
nothing close to it. I was very active with our Players Association. That's one of the reasons I went into law.
Your story is so, I mean, even just like our intro here, it's so rich and there's so many different things. And I can't wait to get my hands on this book. But I was like, okay, where do we start on the podcast? Like, where do we go? And I think we kind of have to start here. So I'm going to go all the way back to you as a Jewish kid in Brooklyn growing up in the 50s. And at some point you learn about the story of Samson. And Samson is kind of the original warrior judge.
That's right.
In a lot of ways. And
I'm glad you picked up on that.
Oh, man, I was like, oh, this kind of became the roadmap for your life, right? He had this God-given super strength, but he was a warrior. He was a judge, literally. But, you know, the word judge is utilized in the Bible with him. How did that set the tone? Like, did you read that and make the connection? And how did you say, okay, because obviously you're not going to live that life, but how did you say, I'm going to apply that, and that's going to become the roadmap for me as I move forward?
The way it happened is there's somewhat of a cultural idea about who can be an athlete and who can't be an athlete.
Right.
That's all nonsense. I went to work for my dad. He had a factory in Brooklyn. And he said, I want to, you know, on the ride home, I want to talk to you about this, the parable of Samson. Hmm. I said, I like that guy. I was already an athlete. And this kind of dashes some of the Jewish stereotypes that they're not strong and they're not able to.
Yeah.
So I liked it. And it was an acceptable pathway. So mine was The Path of Samson. That was an alternate title for the book.
Oh, really?
Yes, it was called The Path of Samson.
I would have found it a lot easier if that was the title. That would have been an easier connection for you. That's very cool.
Interestingly, my parents strongly emphasized education. Mm-hmm. And when I brought home a C, I was told, you have to quit wrestling right now. And this is covered in the book. The wrestling coach said, you're a starting wrestler. And not only that, most of this grades that you're talking about, that happened during the football season. Let me loop in the football coach. My football coach, John Miller, Blasphemy was the wrestling coach. Football coach has my parents sit down. They're looking at the film, and he's saying, just look at the general ability of the kids on the field. Your son is doing remarkable things. I don't have to be detailed here, but it was much faster, much more aggressive, much more effective. He says, he's going to get a scholarship. If you make him quit football, you'll be making a mistake. So my father's eyes opened. My brother and sisters, they were very happy that they could go to college now.
Yeah, right.
So that worked out. But there was another pact that happened. Is the coaches said, they said, we're going to make sure that you start getting some A's.
Yeah.
You start A's and B's. It's a priority for you. My parents insisted on it. And that's what happened.
It became in everybody's best interest.
Yeah, for sure.
This is what I learned. You know, as an athlete, every one of us knows that it's really hard, but after you've done it, you know you can do it. Well, that's what happened in high school. I had that in football, but I had it in academics as well. I hated it. I didn't want to study. I wanted to play with I wanted to party. But they buckled me down, and it was enable me to get into Duke University and then University of Miami Law.
Right.
And I learned this lesson. It's just like strength. You can work that muscle. You can work your brain muscle.
Love that.
And get yourself where you're knowledgeable and able to be a professional.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about that. You're like any warrior, you know, with super strength. It's like you found a home on the football field. You found a home on the wrestling mat, you know. And that takes us, like you talked about, from Brooklyn to Duke University. So your grades couldn't have been as bad as you're talking about.
if you
got into Duke, you know what I mean? Or where you become a two-time heavyweight champion wrestler and all conference performer on both sides of the football. 71, I think, was on offense. 72, I think it might have been on defense. But then your stellar college athletic career comes to an end, and you're drafted by the Dolphins, you talk about, sixth round. And while this is probably pretty cool, you were a rookie walking into a team that just came off a perfect season.
They used to call us damn rookies.
What was that?
Not just rookies?
We were dumb rookies or lots of other things. Or you must be twins because no one person could be that bad. All kinds of stuff.
How intimidating was that?
Oh, and that crew, I remember the Dolphins invited about 130 players in before the veterans. And we're all trying to, you know, learn the play so we don't hurt ourselves or the veterans. And I was in the locker. Jim Mandridge came in and get the F out of my locker. What? You know, it was like that. These guys were pretty tough crowd, intimidating. I'm sure you experienced it. The veterans don't talk to the rookies.
Not. No love.
You have to prove yourself.
Until you prove yourself, there's no love.
You have to show that you're something that can add to the team. No.
Now, granted, I didn't join a perfect season team either. I joined a team that just lost the AFC Championship game. So you really joined a.
They wouldn't give me any. They wouldn't give me two sentences. And it was so lonely. It was so hard in those days. That were really was not for the meek. And Shula with his 2-a-day practice, 3-a-day, 4-a-day practices, and his 12-minute run, and his had to keep weight. Our largest man was Larry Little at 265. The Redskins taught us a lesson or two.
Yeah. Them hogs.
The hogs showed us the way.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Coach Shula. Talk about that a little bit more. Because, I mean, we've had so many people come on here and talk about what it was like to try and live up to the expectations that Coach Shula set. And his style of coaching was, it was not for the meek, right? And so what was that like for you? I don't know what your coaches were like in other than being interested in you getting your grades and working with your parents. I don't know what your high school coaches were like. I don't know what they were like at Duke. But I just have a feeling that Don Shula was just a different situation.
He had me hooked in the first awards banquet where he came as a rookie. That they were giving MVP awards to he's talking about winning another Super Bowl, and I yep, we're going to do it. Yep, I was already convinced. I didn't even know what he looked like.
Love that.
He was great, and he was extremely demanding, and he always wanted you to give your best all the time, always be aware and in tune with the plan. He was tough. He was very demanding. He was difficult to please.
Yeah.
Mm.
But he was a genuine man. He was religious. He was a devout Catholic. I think he went to his church every morning before practices. I tried to get there before him with the law school and all that, and do weights and all that. You couldn't do that.
Couldn't do it.
He frequently called you into his office if he had something a bone to pick with you. I don't think I ever got any praise from the guy.
Right.
He said, that's what I paid you for.
Does that sound familiar, Juice?
That's what he used to say. What do you think?
You got like the kinder, gentler
yeah,
version.
I caught him. I caught him in the 90s, which is probably a little easier than those.
He wouldn't take anything. He ran a military type of program. Not like, I don't want to say anybody currently, but Shula was he had his generals, he was the president and right. the coaches and players, except for the captains. There was very little confrontation that went with those guys. But fast forward 50 years, I'm watching Shula at his, one of his last public events. I visited him for a roasting, a birthday party. And I told one of the stories from the book. What a genuine and wonderful man he was. I'll give you the story. I'll tell it to
you
right now.
That's what we're here for.
All right. We had a reporter named Ed Plested from the Sun Tattler.
Yeah.
And he roasted the Dolphins in a game, and we were going to be the Thanksgiving turkey.
This is the 77 game.
Yeah. So we're all terribly upset about it, and I'm in a pregame breakfast. And Kuchenberg and Langer are talking some stuff. This place did. We're gonna get him. We're real upset. He's hometown paper. And we get into the game, and he triggered our momentum, and we crushed him. It was a 56-pointer.
Yeah,
I think they ended up with a few touchdowns. Towards the last part of the game, one of our ball players got injured. Might have been Vern Denherter.
Yep.
And Bob Matheson said, what happened? And it was Conrad Dobler. For those that don't know, in those days, the Cardinals, Dobler was known as a bad boy. He was a goon. He would hurt people because he could. And he came into the game like that. Any event, after those words were the injury and the words happened, both of the sidelines emptied and we came to the center. Boy, it would have been disgraceful not to be in that center.
Right.
Don't be on film, not in that center.
So
can't be a two-time wrestling champion and not get in the middle of it.
Shula's, get your asses off the field. Don't you go on the field. So he's doing all of that. We come back, and we're happy, but Shula's pretty uptight, and we're a little concerned about it. We're happy, a little concerned. We come back for our Tuesday meeting, and he talks about the game, and he praises it and everything, and he says, I got a letter from Commissioner Rozelle. Mm-hmm. You have to be fined because of, you're not allowed to be on the field. Yeah, you're not allowed on the field. This is, and he is so stern, and he is glaring at us and, you sons of bitches, you ruined the integrity of the internet. He's doing all that stuff. He says, now I want to list the fines. Larry Little, $5,000. Bob Greasy, $1,000. Everybody goes down the list. Ed Newman, $1,000. So just want you to know, I don't want to ever see this type of stuff again.
He gave us two thumbs up.
The name of the chapter. Two thumbs up with a big smile. I couldn't be prouder. That was just a wonderful, wonderful man. He's a good guy.
I love it, man. Speaking of Coach Shula, I mean, everybody knows who played for him, no matter what. If it was in the 70s, the 80s, and 90s, like myself, we all had to face a 12-minute run, Ed.
Yeah.
And
that's legend. Now
for me, I
you
can run all day.
You talk to Nat more. I know it.
For me, I can run all day. But Ed, I have to tell you, Kim Bokamper.
He mentioned
was on this show, and he told us one of the all-time greatest stories ever, you know, that's ever been shared in the tank. It was about you and your epic battle with the 12-minute run, man. Tell us about the 12-minute run, bro.
I have to give you some history. I grew up in a small town on the southern shore, south shore of Long Island, North Belmore. And we moved over to Syosset High School on the North Shore. And things got lost along the way. Like, you have to register, you know, for football and as a seventh grader. So there was no football for me as a seventh grader. What am I going to do in the fall? The athletic director said, why don't you go out for cross country? There's no limit. The reason they had that is they were afraid of players getting raided.
Sure.
You have to register. You have to come from the school district. So I was moving from another school district. It looked bad. They said, absolutely, you can't do it. So I went out for cross country.
Yeah.
And my competitiveness got the better of me. All right, we're going to run for an hour and 20 minutes. I sprinted for the first 3 minutes and came in about 2 hours after everybody else. I didn't know how to run.
Right.
And I never was a long-distance runner body. I'm a power guy.
Right.
I'm a wrestler.
Exactly.
I'm carrying too much weight for that kind of stuff. I didn't want to quit the team, but I was going to hurt my psyche if I kept on coming in last. So I quit, but it scarred me. For the rest of my life, I resisted distance running.
Yeah.
And that's what happened in camp. I said, oh, gosh. I used to get these timers. And
he said, yeah, the heart monitor.
Almost flatlining on.
But every time I crossed the finish line, you had to complete 5 laps, which was 1.33. I had the number of steps measured. And I don't know how I didn't faint. You know, right. It was in the heat. I don't know if the camera's like, but listening over. Like,
Bo said he had the arms.
Everything.
It was true.
It's
true. I had a real, real hard time of it. A lot of it, though, this is part of where I was. I'm bracketed by Greasy and Marino. So, and all the players so I was a veteran.
Right.
I was an all-pro veteran. They're watching, and they love to pick on me.
I bet.
They found the chink in my armor.
Right. They said you were just killing it in the weight room. You were throwing around weight like it was nothing. You had all those records. You'd start all that. So, yeah, they're going to find that thing.
Sandusky, the offensive line coach, said, Coach, you think John Hanna can do a 12-minute run? You think he'd be able to? No, I don't think so. He said, well, can't we do something about that? I said, can't work with Shula. I can't get around that. I could talk to him, but he'd slap me down.
It's so good. It's so good. It Bo tells that story and he gets going. God, it's one of the all timers.
Yeah, it is.
One of the all timers.
I used to tell Kimber on the trap plays, 37 bat or something like that, I don't want to hurt anybody. The films didn't have a soundtrack. Mm. Do they have them today in the practice?
I don't think so. I think it's all still silent.
Yeah.
Kimber. He always knew I was
coming.
He knew it was coming.
You gave him a heads
lean
up.
Lean into it. Lean into it.
Love it. Yes, little brother-in-law, actually.
Yeah. And we were partners.
Yeah.
We had a business together.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. On the Naughty Dolphin, it was Kim and A.J. Dewey and Bob Baumhauer, the four of us and a fifth investor for 2 years had a floating gym called the Naughty Dolphin at right across from the airport and the waterways over by 84, State Road 84.
I didn't know that. Bo's been involved in a million different things. I didn't know that.
That was before his Interstate Battery.
Yeah, right. He told the story of the battery deal. That's a great – God, he's got a lot of good stories. He needs to write a book as well. Yeah, he could. He can come back. Yeah. He can come back. So,
if you see him, I have a book for him. I want to give him a
book.
We'll
see. Absolutely. Definitely. Absolutely.
Definitely.
It's tough to shift from that story to this one. But so your second or third year, at some point, your grandmother notices a mass on your neck, right? And you go to the team physician. The team physician kind of poo-poos it, doesn't, you know, like dismisses it. Come to find out, you've got thyroid cancer.
Here you are at the top of, right?
Now, you didn't know you're going to play 12 years in the NFL, but you've reached the pinnacle. You're in the NFL. You're playing for one of the premier franchises in the league. And 3 years in, you're now in a fight for your life with thyroid cancer.
It seemed like a bad rap. How can your luck be worse? Grandma said, you better take care of this. And I was trying to fight the reality of it. It was a game of chicken for me. But eventually we got into camp. I spoke to our Herbert Virgin. And you're right. He poo-pooed it and said, we'll take care of it later. I started playing pretty good ball. But when we played the Jets, my grandma had an appointment for me with one of the head neck surgeons in Mount Sinai Hospital. They did the exams and they said, you have a malignancy and that's got to come out. And then I'm thinking, how am I going to, it's like the third week in October.
Right.
I said, how am I going to talk to Shula? How am I going to talk to the players? I said, is this a fast growing thing? No. She says, you've had it for at this size for a long time. I don't think it's a fast growing thing. Can we manage to wait until January?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, wow.
Can we go to January? He says, there's very, very little risk, but no longer. So the season ended. My wife Kathy and I were up, and I was having my thyroid operation. The key part of that, and where this story is leading, is I'm real concerned about playing pro football. I said, is this going to affect my career? He said, no, you'll be able to be fully functional in the NFL. If you make it with the Dolphins or don't make it, it's because of you.
Mm.
Right.
So that's all I needed to hear. And again, the formula, it's an obstacle you can overcome. You can overcome this. And I took it as an opportunity to be better than ever. I could die.
Right.
Well, I better do something before then. And that's what happened. That was a transformation. I really went into the land of pain in the weight room and all that stuff.
Well, that's the thing, though. When the doctor says you have cancer and it's October and you say, can it wait till January? Right. Like, I mean, that's just one. And I love we love this game. It's why we're all here. But like a priorities conversation, at some point, do you take a step back? Or does Ed Newman now look at that guy making that decision and say, maybe he should have not waited till January? And it worked out, but do you
think?
It
did work out. I'm not sure it's advisable.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that. I have a similar story. It's just a craziness that happens in this game. It's a love. We had a game, and I busted my left knee. It happened on maybe the ninth play before the end of the game, the eighth play before the end of the game. Larry Little was in the game at right guard. Kuchenberg was at left tackle because of Wayne Moore was hurt. So Larry happened to have an ankle twist. So he runs off the field with an ankle twist, and I have a broken knee. Medial collateral is totally torn. We're behind, so we're just passing the ball, and I was able to manage upper body strength just stable. I couldn't pull or I couldn't sweep or any of that trap, none of that. I would have taken a knee if that had happened. Come out after the game, doctor does the squeezes and the pushes. I've got a torn medial collateral. It has to be operated on. About 3 months later, Sandusky is doing the film breakdown on all injuries. And he's saying, where is the injury? He didn't see the injury. I told you, I played the game out.
Right.
And we went through it. I was in the weight room, of course. And he found me in the weight room, and he bring me the film, and I watched the film, and I said, this is where it happened. What happened is, for those that don't know, you can have three down linemen. They happen to be on the center with Langer and Kuchenberg. Bethea was the guy that caused the action. So Bethea takes the shot inside Kuchenberg, and I give him a shot right in the jaw, And he bounces out, you know, wide, and I turn over to Curly Cope. And I'm helping with, I think it was the Langer. And what's happening is Bethea sees what's happening, and he very quickly comes back inside in the vacuum that I just left. Kuchma was surprised, and he kind of collapsed onto my foot, and his butt went right into the side of my bang, just went right down. Sandusky says, "You knew that was bad? That's what happened? It all happened right at that play?" Said, "Yes, that's right." He said, "Why didn't you come out?" Said, "Little was hurt. Right. We had no guard
right
at the time, and I was all for the team. I was 100% for the team." He said, "Ed, you never can do that again. You might have shredded your knee at that time." The same type of question. Would Ed Newman do that, or any real person do that again?
Right.
You're not a normal person when you're on the football field. You don't feel any pain. And all you feel is, I love this team. I want to win. I will not do anything to stop this team from winning. I will only help this team win.
It's a very unique mindset. So I want to also talk about, you talked about earlier, the cultural, some of the cultural differences that you were exposed to. What was it like being a Jewish football player in the 1970s in the National Football League? Because so I started in 96 here with the team. And I just remember the first game that I ever worked and being in the locker room, and at the end of the game, win, lose, or draw, everyone takes a knee, everyone holds hand, and they say the Lord's Prayer. And that was like, I had never seen anything like that based on the way I grew up. But that was 1996. That wasn't in the 70s. I just wonder what that experience was like, because there couldn't have been a lot of folks that grew up in a similar household as yours. There still aren't to this day. Was that difficult? Did it present challenges, or was it just one more thing that you dealt with in life?
Was there anti-Semitism might be a question. I didn't let it get to me. I didn't let it affect me. I was able to fight. I was able to defend myself. I was able to stand up to people. After a couple of confrontations, it stopped. I was known as a good guy. I was always honest. I was as generous as I could be with people, and I was contributing to the team. I didn't cause fights. I didn't cause any problems at that. Was there a virulent anti-Semitism in the locker room? No, there was not. Very rarely were there be comments. There were occasionally, but they were addressed and redressed pretty quickly.
I bet.
Did it have an effect of, as far as acceptance or maybe stature or that kind of thing? Who can say? As far as my attitudes, what you were talking about, I was very happy that Father Walker walked in and said, and let's say the Lord's Prayer. It helped my teammates win, and it helped me focus. In those moments, I thought about my guardian angel. It was my grandma who passed away some decade earlier. That kind of thing. Whatever brings you strength, spiritual strength, this was a good vehicle. I wasn't offended or put on the spot. There were fundamental believers that maybe cried for my soul. That was somewhat disturbing. I defended myself. It's a debate that's been around for millennia.
Yeah,
I believe in God. I think it's the same God of Muslims and Christians as the Jews. And the standards of good living, of righteous living, are identical.
Right.
There's differences in the details. My interpretation is, I think it's a grand experiment that's going on right now. God is finding his way. Mm. That's my personal belief on it.
I couldn't agree more. That's good stuff, except, and I know there's just a lot going on, especially nowadays with everybody and what they're going through.
Oh, yeah, right now with the Israel and Hamas.
Yeah, it's a lot going on.
I hadn't thought about that in the context. The emotions are very elevated right now.
As important as that is, I think we'll talk a little bit more about some football. That's super important stuff that we could honestly do a whole episode. Podcast on, I'm sure, but a little more football. I mean, you played 12 seasons NFL.
Got injured on that 13th.
Yeah,
that goes to the pension.
That one
goes to the pension. Goes to the pension. Really, it was the next year.
That's remarkable. Obviously, 12 seasons plus. With part of that getting into that 13. But one of the things that really stands out to us players, as that enjoy that type of longevity, is that you've run across a whole bunch of different players through those different eras.
Yeah.
You know, you think about it. I mean, when you got there in the 70s, it's more of a you know, ground and pound style, you know, with Zonka and Merck and Kick. And then, you know, in that fierce line we talked about. And then in 1983, you get this kid named Marino that comes around.
I was on the bookends.
Throwing the ball. Yeah, he started throwing the ball all over the yard. And that's something different, man. Meanwhile, you age like fine wine, Ed. I mean, how did you become a perennial Pro Bowler player, you know, in your ninth season? In your ninth season, I think it was, right, Big Seth? Is that when it was? And every year from that point on and until you're 12, you go in from a ground and pound type of guy, and then you got to be in probably pass pro more than you probably like to as a lineman.
Every year from 1973 when I was drafted, I'd go into Shula's office and say, I'm playing like a starter, but I can't get contract. I can't get traction. Don't worry. Be patient. I had two unbelievable powers in Larry Little and Bob Kuchenberg.
Think about that. Right. Trying to crack that line.
Right.
And I thought I was playing at all pro levels way earlier, certainly at starting levels. And I said, I'm losing opportunities, coach. We got to do something. And he would let me sub in quite a bit. And he knew he had an inexpensive insurance policy in case somebody went down. But the answer is I was in the shadow of Kuchenberg and Little. Mm. I was playing.
You played at all pro level, man.
I thought I was playing at all pro level.
You're damn right you were. You were. You proved that it was all pro level.
I was playing at year 6, 7, and 8 as well.
Yeah.
At those levels. They thought my name was Kuchenberg, you know.
And that's a hell of a compliment, too.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. I no disrespect to Kuchenberg because he was great and is always going to be remembered that way. Same thing with Larry Little, who, by the way, also has a book coming out.
Does he?
Yeah.
Chicken has a book coming out?
Yes, he does.
Gives
yes,
us a good excuse to get him to sit right in that seat. I like it. We need more guys to write books.
We'll ask you a little bit more about him. We'll research him.
I was trying to be a buddy with Larry Little, and his first words would be, damn, rookie, you're not going to be taking my job. So
I love it.
Trying to make the club right
that's
now.
That's it. That's it. Look, that's all I'm trying to do right now.
That's it.
Trying to be the best teammate I can be.
Yeah, for sure. So, let's fast forward to that year 12. It's the your first team All Pro at the end of that year. It's Dan Marino's. That's the year that Dan became. I think
this
Dan
miraculous year
probably became a Hall of Famer in his second season. Right when he did things that just nobody had ever seen, and the entire offense did. It was the number one offense in the league by a mile. 48 touchdowns, 5,084 yards, the whole thing. But not only are you playing at an elite level in every game, guys go through the playoffs, as you said earlier, you're now going to law school at night. And you can't let anything slip because you promised Don Shula that it wouldn't. How in the world does that happen? Like, how are you able to do all of that stuff, to do it at a high level? And then is it true that you guys dismantle Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship and the next day you take a final exam for your first year of law school? Like,
That's right.
A real thing?
That stuff happened. Yes.
How did you manage all that? And then if you could, I guess you put in that kind of time and effort, you get hurt the next year. Talk about also how it led to the transition of your second life in a lot of ways. You know, you find this world in the legal system that goes from attorney to judge.
You have to be very dedicated and you have to schedule everything. And you don't have the luxury of downtime. So in the morning, I don't know if I mentioned it already, I would go to the library and open up the Biscayne Library.
Yeah.
There's a lunch period. It's supposed to be relaxed, 10 minutes for lunch. I was 5 minutes for lunch and 50 minutes in the weight room because I didn't have the afternoon.
Right.
After the practice is over, the guys are saying, let's have a beer. Let's go fool around a little bit. I'm worried about traffic hour. I got a 6:30 first class, and I'm supposed to meet with my wife and two small children at a restaurant right across the street from the university. And it was a very, very tight schedule. If I had an ankle twist or any kind of health injury, there could have been a major disruption in my career.
Everything else.
In my plan.
That, like, how did that not happen? You're 12 years in. You're playing offensive line.
He wouldn't admit it, though, Big Seth. If he did, he wasn't telling any damn lie. That's for sure.
You had to have an ankle twist.
No, I didn't. It was I was very lucky. This is wood. I'm knocking on it. And I was in the best shape in my life at the time. Again, from adversity, I wanted to be. I was disappointed when that happened. I wanted to play another couple of years.
Mm. For sure.
I wanted to graduate law school.
As a
professional
ball player. That would have been pretty cool. So it does happen. And so it's now all law school. And you pass the bar. You open up your own practice.
I have another little story there. I come into the facility and I asked to speak to Coach Shula again. And I said, I'm an injury reserve and I don't like getting this money without contributing.
Mm.
Come on, Ed.
I'm telling you, honest.
You just hurt his feelings with that.
I'm telling you.
You earned that money, bro.
I said, I want to be an assistant coach. Let me work as an assistant coach. He said, no. You're in law school. You finished law school. I said, can I go day division? I was going to, you know, accelerate my graduation date. He said, yes, you can. I had plenty of time during the day, during the season. And I didn't want to be in the way of anybody. I came to my locker and I would work out and I would do all of that. I was starting to, by October, I got injured in August. By October, I was sprinting. I'm doing my sprint work and I came into the locker room. Coach Shula, Ed, I want to talk to you for a minute. He said, I'm watching you. The team needs an offensive lineman. We need a guard. We want you to come back and play. We're going to take you off of injured reserve. And I'm pretty quick-witted. Okay, coach, I'm ready to go. We better talk to the doctor first.
He was looking
at what kind of fire I had in my belly.
Right. Yeah, right.
And I did have the fire in my belly.
Right.
I did. I was going to go. We were working with a director of player personnel at the time was Charlie Winter. Charlie Winter. And I said, look, the way I work out is not human. I don't want to reach a contract in July. I want to reach a contract in February or in March, and I'm not going to ask for less than, you know, I need to have some serious money.
Right.
His response to me was, well, we don't do that. You'll always be one of the family. Oh, my God, did he stabbed me in the heart.
Yeah.
Stabbed me in the heart. Around July 27th, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I called the newspapers together and announced a retirement. I didn't want to use the word. I hated the word retirement. Mm. I said, I want to come in and play ball. I am physically able to do it. But the Dolphins can't bring me in unless I have a signed contract. I told Charlie Winter, this is critical. I'm sorry, I forgot the point. I said, you called me one of the family, but I'm not going to be working out after starting in May. Starting May 1st, I'm going to be a civilian in the gym, not an all-pro. I'm going to be doing 150 pounds, not 350 or 550.
Right.
He said, you'll always be one of the family. So when Shula lost Steve Clark, Jeff Taze, and Bob Kuchenberg in preseason, and I'm 1 week out of saying to all the media, I can play. He called me up, said, you win. We're going to give you your contract. You'll get your guarantee. You'll get your contract. You'll get your terms. And again, I had to be principled. I said, coach, I told you I wasn't going to be working out.
Mm.
He said, don't worry. I'll let you work out. I'll let you have a 3 weeks or so to get yeah. ready. I knew he was lying.
Right.
He's lying. He's going to get me out there as soon as he can. It wouldn't be fair to the fans. Wouldn't be fair to me. I have my faculties. I'm not sure I would have been able to take, you know, to protect myself.
Right.
I made the right decision at that point when he made that offer. But the offer was everything. The idea is when someone said you weren't good enough, that would kill me.
Yeah.
That would kill me. I never heard that. What I heard was, we'd like you to come back. Sorry, coach. That was my narrative. I cried.
Yeah.
I cried.
I was going to say it.
So, oh, my God, I cried. Oh, it was the hardest day of my life.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. And I think majority of us at that point of our career, we cry. Either in public or most of us in private. You know, we definitely shed a tear.
When I was talking to the press, I was bawling.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I still cry. I cry all the time now, but that's a different story.
Thinking about it.
I cry for my bad back, my bad knee, my bad ankle.
It's a whole different type of crying. But you shift gears and you go all in and you build a legal career. And it's going to seem silly to speed through a 40-something year career in law. But you get your law degree, you're a practicing lawyer, And then you decide to become a judge. And was it 95? Is that when you ran? And right. So you're a judge. But what's the most fascinating, and we've had him on the show, at what point did you decide, I need a new bailiff, and I think it's going to be Tony Nathan?
I didn't know people in the – so I got Ed Salinetro. He was a corrections officer. I'd like to be a bailiff. Okay. And he knew what he was doing, and he helped me out a great deal. And he got a job with the police department, and he moved on. My secretary, Diana, she says, I have a cousin, Mitch Perez. He became my bailiff, and he worked with me for about 7 or 8, 9, maybe more. And a terrific guy, and he was wonderful. But he had a family and kids, and he said, I need more money. Hmm. I said, I'm not the one that's...
Did you tell him, come on, you're part of the family.
That's right.
Did you give him a Charlie Winter line?
The next thing that's happening is there are about seven... That's right. There are about 7 or 8 police officers, people that are near retirement. They want the job. And
right.
I really would like to be with a teammate. Hmm. And I'm thinking, who could I... And I'm reading in the newspaper that, and through the grapevine, that Tony Nathan was having a hard time picking up a coaching position.
Yeah,
I gave him a call. I said, Tony, I think this is good for you. I'm not sure that you'll want to do it, but I think it's worth a try. It's, you know, this is a really, really good job. If we don't have a jury trial, then we're just, you know, kicking around for a while. He said, I don't know. I don't know anything about being a bailiff or the courts. He let it go. He didn't respond. My wife said, I know how to make him respond. She called his wife.
Damn right. Damn right.
That'll do it, right?
Next thing that happens,
he said, he's at the door. He said, where do I get a new uniform, a bailiff's uniform? And that was about 13 years now, 13 years ago. We got to be known as the Dolphin Division. He's the sweetest man and very easy to get along with. And we talked a lot about Shula, the players, how the teams were going. We used to kid with the attorneys about who was playing who, and Buffalo's going to kick your butts this year. So this was all good stuff. All real good stuff.
It had to be fun to feel like every guy who was sat
there, really having a teammate,
right? Because every guy who sat in this seat,
it was an old lineman with a running back.
Yeah.
What's better than that? And they missed the locker room. They missed the locker room, and here you are. You kind of brought the locker room back in the smallest way that you could.
The law. And the court system, it helped me a great deal in the transition. You mentioned, alluded to that earlier.
Yeah.
I was too busy to, you know, to lament about it.
Right.
But I still cried. I did cry. Sure. It was so core to my essence. I was a pro football player.
Right.
And like I tell a lot of people, Ed, it's like, you know, we don't start playing football in high school. We start playing football when we're like little kids. We're like one of the only professions that you start – playing at 5 or 6 years old to be a professional.
Yeah, I wasn't doing PR at 5.
You weren't thinking about being a judge or a lawyer at 5 years old, you know? So, yeah, when it does stop, man, it's
a warrior judge.
It's a tough deal, for sure, a warrior
there's
judge.
There's one little section here where I'm having a final game in high school, and we won the division. It was a very important game and for our high school. And I'm looking around at this, and half the room is crying. We won. I was going to Duke University.
You're going on, and they were done.
It was their last game.
And I realized it for the first time, and I shed a tear.
Did you think about that when you had to say that word retired to those reporters? Did you think back to, I get it now, that what those guys were going through?
I didn't specifically. Yes, it was. That was the feeling. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh man, okay. Also,
this is some heavy stuff.
Yeah, it is,
man.
Stuff.
It is.
And we're gonna get you out of here now. But before we let you get out of here, man, we end every episode of the podcast with the Fish Tank 2 minute drill. And if you were part of the high powered 84 offense, I mean, I know that you can definitely navigate a 2 minute drill like nobody's business.
Yeah, so, Marino did that.
Yeah, he was pretty good at it. He was pretty good at it. And you were definitely a part of it, and that's, you know, part of that conditioning. So our crew here is gonna put 2 minutes on the clock.
Oh, no.
You're going to have a timeout.
Oh, I am.
If you need it. If you need
Danny
it.
Said by that, Danny said he didn't need
it. Danny said he didn't need one.
If you need one, you can call a timeout.
And we're gonna send you some quick hitting questions. And, you know, they're all fun questions. It's all fun.
Can I call a friend?
No phone to friends.
Different
in this
game.
One.
Different
well, I
game.
Mean, sometimes nowadays they got the headset now, but I don't know.
That's true.
Yeah, we don't have that here.
Do they have? They don't have the coach to guard communication system,
correct,
though. I think
correct.
It's just to the 15 quarterback.
15 seconds in.
Right? You got this. I have faith in you.
You'll be all right. You'll be all right. All right. You ready? You guys
Mike's
ready?
Got the clock.
All right.
The clock started?
That's it.
Not yet. It's going to be right here in front. All right. You ready? Here we go. All right. As we discussed, Tony Nathan served as the bailiff in your courtroom for years, which got us thinking about, you know, who else could have made a great bailiff if Tony had stepped down or decided not to do it? Who would have made the best bailiff? Dwight Stevenson, Larry Little, Jim Langer, or Bob Kuchenberg?
Oh.
Of those four, who would have made the best bailiff?
Kuchenberg, Langer,
Stevenson, or Little?
Little. Get your butts in those chairs. Stop talking.
Larry Little, the bailiff. I love it. All right. Okay. You were inducted into the National Jewish Sports Hall of Fame in 1999. You're actually one of three Miami Dolphins or former Miami Dolphins who have had that honor bestowed upon them. Can you name either of the other two?
Steve Shaw?
No, I don't know if Steve's in there or if he is. I missed it.
Yeah.
More recent guys.
Did you play with Steve?
No, I did not. No.
Your wife is right. Phone a friend. It's the wife. And Jay Fiedler.
Of course.
Jay Fiedler. And
he was great.
Sage Rosenfels, actually, which is, you know, Sage is, he plays whatever card is going to be in the best interest.
What happens is, I mean, I go on the golf course and I see a number and I'm thinking of a player.
Right.
But Fiedler was outside of my wheelhouse.
Right.
You know, Marino was his predecessor.
That's right. Yep.
That's right.
It was a little more modern.
But okay. I that's why I didn't get that one. So
no worries. We won't hold it against
you. All good. All right. Judge, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I always laugh at movies about professional football because they rarely capture the real story or about the whole game. That being said, what is your favorite movie that's centered around a courtroom?
Help me, Kathy.
What?
That's my favorite.
I cheated. The two youths, for sure. I love it. Oh, that's pretty good. Okay, final question. What was more difficult, making a tough legal decision or the 12-minute run?
12-minute run.
There it is. That is the 2-minute drill.
12-minute run.
I can hear it.
Although probably the opposite's probably more true. Right. The moral decisions are more important than the 12-minute run.
Those were probably a little bit more important.
But I had a nightmare. I didn't sleep the whole off season. I have to get that 12-minute run out of the way.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Ed, thank you so much. This was incredible. Really, really enjoyed it.
Thanks for diving in, Judge. We really appreciate it.
I cannot wait to get Warrior Judge. Yeah.
Well, check it out. We have it in all the outlets, and hardcover or soft cover. We priced it to move. I'm not.
Is it audio as well, Judge?
It is. It isn't yet.
Okay.
It isn't yet. It's something
you're gonna
consider.
Wait for the audio version.
Well, you know me. I'm a terrible reader, man.
Come on, man. You don't tell me you can't read.
I can't read. No.
That is not accurate.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Just like Drew said, thanks for diving into The Fish Tank presented by iHeartRadio. Be sure to follow us on whatever streaming platform you're using, and don't be afraid to rate the show or leave us a comment. We love your feedback. And remember, you can find us as well as Drive Time with Travis Wingfield and all of our international partners on MiamiDolphins.com.